This is Steve Dale's Pet
Steve
World.
Steve Dale's Pet World.
Got an issue with Fido or Fluffy? Steve Dale is here to help.
What's up? That felt pretty good, right?
Steve Dale's Pet World.
Oh, okay.
Whether your feline is missing the litter box or your canine doesn't like the mailman, call the show toll-free.
She said toll-free.
At 866-554-PETS.
They've done studies, you know.
That's 866-554-7387.
60% of the time, it works. Every time.
So can you imagine doing this? Your dog is diagnosed with heart disease, and the only way to correct it, the only way, there's no medication, anything like that, the only way is kind of like an open heart surgery. In fact, that's what it is. But there are only two places on the planet that provide it. One is in Japan, and the other's in the UK. So you'd have to travel with your dog, small dog, but yet travel with your dog to either one of those two countries. Would you do that? So not only are you paying for the surgery, you're paying for airfare and you're paying for a trip to Japan or England. Well, that's what Kim Thornton did. And the results were amazing. And Kim, who's a journalist who writes about companion animals, has authored, I don't know, 15 books. I mean, really, she's 15, 20 books. She is amazing. She traveled halfway around the world, so we'll talk to her about that, but we're also going to talk to her about the fact that the University of Florida, right here in the United States, you don't have to go quite as far, is now offering that surgery and exactly what that surgery is that we're talking about. A big issue is flying on airplanes with pets, or maybe with other animals that aren't pets, but you're saying they're pets. Like, you know, that peacock that got all the publicity for flying on the plane. People that fly with boa constrictors. What's that about, really? Should that be allowed? Dr. Gail Golab of the American Veterinary Medical Association has actually, with others, been working with the airlines to kind of figure all this out. What is appropriate? What's not appropriate? And she will give us an update. But most of all, we are here for you to talk to you, to answer your telephone calls at 866-554-PETS. I'm a certified animal behavior consultant, so I'm here to help you. 866-554-7387. And incidentally, we have some news. I've been talking about microchipping forever, right? I mean, that's a great idea to help identify our pets. Now there's a microchip that has something extra special that comes with it. I will explain what that's all about. Nikki, welcome to the show, Nikki.
Hi, thank you.
What's your question?
Well, my daughter thinks that she needs a bird, and I didn't have one growing up, so I don't really know anything about them.
Why does she think she needs a bird? Did she get up one morning and say, you know, Mom, I need a bird? And how old is your daughter? I hope she's not over 25.
No, she's 6.
Uh-huh.
So we rent, so we can't have a cat or a dog. We're sort of limited, and we're tired of fish at this point. So she thought maybe a bird would be neat, a nice change. And I'm wondering if that's something that she can kind of help out with, keep taking care of, what kind of care they require, that sort of thing.
You know, great question. How do you feel about it, Mom?
I don't mind it as long as it's not going to keep us up at night and
nope.
Be really expensive to care for and to buy. So I think it might be neat.
Yeah, it would be. You know, birds are fascinating, and they really are. You have to decide, first of all, whether you want a bird to just watch, like a finch, which are beautiful. They need to be fed. Birds are kind of dirty, no matter what kind of bird it is. I mean, they do what they do inside the cage, which means you have to clean it almost pretty much every day.
Okay.
And when I say you, I mean you or an adult in the household.
Okay.
Because the reality is a six-year-old isn't going to care for the pet and shouldn't care for the pet without adult supervision.
Okay, yeah.
So it's really all about you. So that would be one thing, sort of an ornamental bird like a finch or a more interactive bird like a cockatiel or a budgie, which we call parakeets. So those would be my best two as far as, you don't want to, I don't think, jump to an African gray parrot or a scarlet macaw. They're tough to keep. And unless you have some experience with birds, they are absolutely not the first choice. So I think you're far better off if you go the parrot route, which is a more interactive bird route. And they need to come out of their cages. They need interaction with you. Your six-year-old needs to learn, and hopefully she already knows this, to be very gentle.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, whether you choose a cockatiel or a parakeet, particularly a cockatiel, they are surprisingly affectionate.
Really?
They really get to know you. They have most certainly their own personalities. And a cockatiel in particular would, over time, depending on the individual bird, because they're all different, they will spend time on your shoulder. They'll watch you clean. You have to understand certain things. The kitchen, for example, is the worst place to keep them because they're susceptible to if you... I'm sure. Are you a good baker?
I think so, yes.
Okay, then I want to make sure that you are. I'll be at your house a week from Wednesday.
Sure.
Just to test it out. I say that because if you burn something, even just a little bit, the fumes may make a bird actually very sick, very sick, to the point of killing that bird.
Oh, no.
So you want to make sure that you have a room that's appropriate to keep the bird in. And they're not going to keep you up all night, but still the bedroom is probably not the best room.
Okay.
That's up. And you want a certain amount of activity, which it sounds like you have in your house, from what
yes,
I hear
I
in the background.
I have a 16-month-old.
Right. So the next question is, do you have time to do this? Should you be waiting a year or two, and that's entirely your call.
Okay.
As far as expense goes, the birds themselves, I wish they were more expensive, then maybe people would be a little more responsible. You know, they're well under $100, depending on where you get it at.
Okay.
A cockatiel, you're best going to someone who really, or a shop if you have one where you live, that specializes in birds. They're better bred. But you can go to one of the superstores and get one as well.
Like a Petco or a PetSmart or something?
Well, that,
or
as well, that wouldn't be my first choice. My first choice would be a bird specialty shop, but they're not in every city. So,
yeah.
So, or go on the internet and find a breeder that really seems legitimate.
Okay.
And that would be my first choice for a cockatiel. For a budgie or a cockatiel, you're okay going to one of the pet superstores. The caging will actually perhaps cost as much as the bird, and some toys that you need to buy and some initial food. The first thing you do, though, before you do any of that, get a book.
Okay.
And read about what you need. Read about what these birds need as far as food. Like any pet, it's a commitment. And the cockatiels, if you get one, they can live almost 20 years or about that. Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's a lot better shelf life than my fish did.
They will last longer than your average betta fish, but that's also a responsibility. So think about it. How old is your daughter now?
She's 6.
If this bird lives to the age of 20, this bird will be her best friend, perhaps, you hope, you don't know, but that's very possible through the time she is dating and goes to college, and I'm going to make you panic now, gets married. You know, this bird's going to be around for a long time. So you need to be committed. It's wonderful, and I'm glad to hear you say that it's wonderful.
Okay.
All right. I thank you much for your call, Nikki.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
I have a secret for you. Type in my name on Facebook, Steve Dale, under Pages, and you can, and I hope you do, like my fan page. One way to keep track of our pets is to microchip them, and I'll be talking about a new sort of special feature, I think that's appropriate to say, on a microchip that will soon, actually is now available. And this is really exciting news. Another way to keep track of your pets is just to look on your phone. That's right. Now, there are systems like the Blink security system that isn't only there to help us spot bad guys who are in places we don't want them to be in, like our bedrooms, but also to keep track of our pets when we're not there. I was just at the Western Veterinary Conference in Las Vegas, and every once in a while, even when I was up on stage, my phone vibrated and went blink. This little, that's what it sounds like almost. And I look on my phone. I did not do that when I was on stage. And I saw, well, our dog walk across the room. Our other dog walk across the room. I did not see them order pizza. I still don't know how they do that. And in a moment, I'll tell you how to get 20% off all Blink outdoor XT camera systems. Blink motion-activated indoor and outdoor cameras are wire-free. They're set up in minutes and run on 2 lithium batteries that last up to 2 years. And Blink's live feed option, as I've done, lets you monitor your home and your pets to check them out anywhere you are from the Blink smartphone app that really works. It's amazing. As long as you have Wi-Fi, it works. You can see what's going on. No contracts, no subscriptions, totally affordable. And right now, Blink Outdoor XT camera systems are an impressive 20% off. but you have to hurry. This sale ends March 16th at midnight Eastern Time. Visit blinkprotect.com/sale, blinkprotect.com/sale, blinkprotect.com/sale. Blink is an Amazon company, and it works with Alexa.
Welcome back to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You want answers?
Steve's here to help you stay on good terms with your best friend.
You can't handle the truth.
Call in with your questions at 866-554-PETS.
So the truth is, and we've talked about it for a very long time, why microchips really save lives. Microchips are great. All pets should have a microchip. Pets get out. They get lost. They cannot say, here's my home address, please. And, you know, cats, generally they should, but they don't wear collars with ID tags. The tags can fall off, and they do sometimes dog collars. Also, bad guys can take those collars off, can't take a microchip off. It's about the size of a grain of rice. It's inserted via injection by a veterinary professional. It takes less than 10 seconds to do. Now, that's the good news. That's always been the truth. It still is the truth. By the way, please register with your microchip company. Not doing so is like having a cell phone with no phone number. So please register with the microchip provider, because otherwise the microchip is of no value. If they scan the chip, whoever finds the pet, it lands in an animal shelter. They scan the pet and there's no information about you or not updated information about you, but a phone number that was your phone number 12 years ago when you lived on the other side of the country, that is not helpful. So they need updated information about you. But as long as they have that, they can return the pet to you. And every single day that happens over and over and over again. I've talked about Home Again's system because it is so good. It was one of the pioneering microchip providers, and now they've pioneered something else that I love. And technology is kind of crazy. I don't even understand technically. They tried to explain it to me, and I said, what? I don't understand exactly how this works. But somehow, some way, the microchip reads an accurate temperature of your dog or cat. So this is what I'm talking about. You go to the veterinarian, and typically your veterinarian sticks that thermometer where the sun doesn't shine, right? And your pet is not happy about it. Would you be happy about that? So your pet is not happy about that. We can try to ameliorate that a bit by feeding your pet as your pet gets poked with that thermometer. But there are veterinarians saying, don't even bother taking that temperature unless you really need it. Well, now there's another way to take the temperature, and that is simply to scan the new Home Again microchip. It's incredible. And as I said, they explained to me how technically this works and why it's accurate. And I said, after this 10-minute explanation, I said, what? Because it is so technical. I don't understand it. I don't maintain to understand it. All I know is this. I talk about the Fear-Free Initiative in veterinary medicine to help those exams up so the dogs and cats feel less fear, stress, and anxiety. That's the whole point. So they're not anxious during the veterinary visit. And incidentally, through fearfreehappyhomes.com, you can read a whole lot more about this and how dog trainers, dog groomers are now even being certified as fear-free. Entire veterinary schools are being certified as fear-free. So to lower that fear, anxiety, and stress, there are some things we can do. And if one thing we can do is simply scan that dog or cat to determine the temperature of that animal, that's totally non-invasive, right? I mean, you're taking a scanner. You're not even touching the pet when you do that. That is a great thing. I love that idea because it's good that these pets are microchipped anyway. So why not do it with this new Home Again microchip, which includes the pet's temperature? Coming up next, I talk to a colleague, a friend who writes books about companion animals, about what she did for her dog once it was discovered her dog needed corrective surgery for heart disease.
He doesn't bite, and he has all his shots. This is Steve Dale's Pet World.
Kim Thornton is a journalist who writes about pets and has been doing so for a very long time. Has written, I don't know how many books, but it's up into the 20s. A superstar in the world of pet journalism. Has edited for, well, you name the pet magazine. She has probably, I think, edited for that magazine, or at least written for that magazine. Kim, you have an interesting story to tell about one of your dogs, a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. The fact that this dog is a Cavalier has a lot to do with the story. Dog's name is Harper, and I'll kind of let you tell it from there.
Okay, thank you. First, I would like to go back in time a little bit to a dog you might remember named Darcy.
Yes.
Darcy was also a Cavalier, and she got mitral valve disease when she was about 3 years old, and that's a very common form of heart disease in Cavaliers, and she died of that when she was 6 and a half. And when she was diagnosed, I thought there must be some kind of surgery. And being a pet journalist, I called the top cardiologists around the country. Isn't there any kind of surgery that can save my dog? And they all said, no, it's been tried and nothing has ever worked. So Darcy died in 2006. And I didn't know this at the time. But in Japan, a surgeon named Masami Uechi was developing the very type of surgery that could save dogs like Darcy. And I didn't hear about it until probably 2014. Mm-hmm. I heard a story about a man who had raised money to bring him to Cornell University to operate on his dog. And I was so interested in that. You know, at the time, Harper was fine, but I thought I might need to know about this someday. But I couldn't find out anything more about it. The man who brought Dr. Uechi over was kind of a recluse, and Cornell couldn't really help me. So I just kind of filed it away in the back of my mind. And then in late 2016, I found out there was a Facebook group of people who had actually had this surgery done or were interested in having it done. And so I joined that group, still didn't need it for Harper, but 2 months later, she was diagnosed as being in congestive heart failure. And I was stunned. I was so upset. And I asked my cardiologist, do you know about that surgery? Do you think Harper would be a candidate? And surprisingly, she said, yes, I think she would. She did know about it, which not very many cardiologists or veterinarians do know about it. And her husband, who was also a veterinary cardiologist, had a client who had had a dog undergo this and did very well. So I interviewed a couple of people who had had it done. I got a second opinion from Paul Pion, who I'm sure you're familiar with.
Legendary veterinary cardiologist, yes, in California.
And I talked to a French veterinarian who knew the vets who do this. Because the twist is that you have to take your dog to France or Japan or London to have this surgery done.
Which is, you know, you've got a dog with heart failure that you're traveling with,
mm-hmm,
and you have to have the funds really to travel halfway across the world.
Right. I was able to make a decision quickly because I had already spoken to these people before it became a necessity, and we were able to get a surgery date in France about 4 months later in May.
So the good news for Harper is that Harper's fine now.
Harper's doing very well.
You've got even better news.
The really exciting news for people in the U.S. and Canada is that University of Florida is starting a surgical program in April. They are bringing in Dr. Uechi to train a surgeon there. As well as the rest of the team, you need people in ICU. You need people to learn how to run the bypass machine.
And that's all for this one surgery, for this one type, specifically this one type of heart disease?
Yes. So about 10% of dogs get heart disease. And of those 10%, about 75% get mitral valve disease. So it is very common. It's usually seen in older small dogs, but there are certain breeds who are more prone to it.
And
Cavaliers
are one.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, this is incredible, exciting news. And, of course, we get news from the pet journalist. Kim Thornton, thank you so very much. And congratulations for first of all, doing this. Shows how much you care. And secondly, far more important than anything, Harper's doing great. And
she is.
Clearly, we can all see. So are you.
Thank you for letting me tell people about it.
Thank you. Your phone calls next, 866-554-PETS.
Welcome back to Steve Dale's Pet World.
866-554-PETS, 866-554-7387. You pick up the phone, you do what Dawn in New York did. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
We'll find out.
All right. Oh, no. What's going on?
What's going on? Okay. A few months ago, I saw a few cats walking around kittens. So I went, I left them some food.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The two kittens turned into five kittens.
Okay, that can happen.
Okay. Now, I want Fido. She's the friendliest. You know, she'll take food from my hand. She'll, you know,
mm-hmm.
come over, sniff my finger. She'll, you know, sniff my palm.
She loves you.
And she'll play with string with me.
Okay.
I want her.
Okay.
Okay, then there's Lenny. I don't know who's who, but he's got long hair, and he's just beginning to trust me.
Oh, all right.
Okay, there's Zorro.
Yes?
She stays close, but she just watches to see what's happening.
Okay.
Okay, we got Rover, and I'm not sure about him. He watches, but he keeps his distance.
Well, maybe Rover's not sure about you. Listen, I don't want to go through all the cats here one by one, but I will tell you this. If there are friendly cats, you absolutely can take them indoors. If they are moderately friendly, over time they'll become more friendly indoors. They're safer indoors. They live longer lives indoors. They need to be spayed or neutered no matter what you do. Now, are these barn cats?
Are they feral?
Are they barn cats? Is this a barn that you have, or?
Yeah.
All right. So one option
I
is
I haven't touched them yet.
All right. So
they've never felt.
Uh-huh. So
won't touch them.
One option is to leave some of them out in the barn, provide shelter so they're warm. It gets pretty cold in New York. It could get pretty hot in New York at certain times of the year as well. So make sure they have shelter to keep out of the sun and make sure. But if they're barn cats or inside the barn, and make sure that they have shelter to keep warm, which is the bigger issue. So that's
right.
that's possible to do. It's also possible, based on your description, to actually take these cats indoors. You need to spay, as I said, you need to spay and neuter the cats. There are veterinarians that will do it low cost. And then bring them indoors and don't expect them to all cuddle with you. It could be some will be more trusting than others. It will take
right.
time. You have to make life interesting indoors. So the good news is they have one another to play with and interact with.
Right.
Provide plenty of litter boxes so they have lots of spaces and lots of choices to go. If your house is on more than one level, you need a litter box for...
We got four cats and a dog.
Oh, you currently have four cats?
Yeah.
Okay, so I would think twice about bringing in, what is it, five more cats? So the friendliest of the bunch, maybe you could bring in, slowly introduce to your other cats. There's a way to do that, to suggest that you're going to be more likely to be successful with all that. And that is to introduce the new cat very gradually, put the new cat in a sanctuary room, and over time, acclimate that new cat to other cats. Use products like Feel Away Multicat. The
right.
classic Feel Away will help too. These are pheromone products. Use play. which is a great stress buster. And when finally they come together, then they all get a reward. They get an amazing treat. And what they will learn over time is I only get this treat with this other cat is around. But I wouldn't, you know, if I'm doing my math right, then you'd have 10 or 11 cats, and that is a bit much. So what you should do then is to spay and neuter the cats that are the barn cats. Make sure, again, they have shelter. You could supplement whatever they eat in the barn with food, cat food.
The only place I can put them now is in the cellar. The dog doesn't like cats.
You know,
the cats are upstairs and the dog is downstairs.
All right. So given your situation, there's nothing wrong with having barn cats if they're well cared for. That's the big caveat, if they are well cared for. So as I said, and I'll say it again, have the cat spayed or neutered so you don't have more kittens. Make sure they're sheltered so they're warm and also safe. Safe away from predators in a shelter, preferably also one that's up high. That potential predators, I don't know if you have raccoons up your way, but potential predators can't get into.
We got coyotes.
Well, can coyotes get into the barn?
No, they haven't come that close yet.
All right, so then that's not an issue, but make sure the cats have a way to get away from potentially predators should they come in, and also supplement them with food, and they'll be fine.
Well, we have them in the barn right now.
Right.
And I put some beds in there.
Good.
I have dry food. I bring out moist food and water twice a day.
That's wonderful.
But, you know, it's minus 35 at times.
Well, there are warming beds you could buy. There are all sorts of things you could buy that do make it warmer. Providing height helps. So up high, it'll be still minus 20, but it will be a little warmer than down on the ground. The cats have obviously acclimated to it. They're surviving. I'm not suggesting it's a good idea. I am suggesting you provide warmer places for them. Straw is a great idea. That's what experts recommend. It somehow holds in hay holds in the warmth, apparently. The cats do tend to snuggle with one another when it's really that cold to warm themselves.
Right.
So I think that, you know, if they've survived this long through the winter, you know, they've made it. So that's the good news, and you can make things better for them. I'm absolutely in support of you doing that. That's a great thing to do. But I think given your situation, unless you know someone who wants to adopt the friendlier of the cats, I think they're okay out in the barn. Okay?
But what about fixing them?
I said you should spay and neuter them. Yes, absolutely.
I have a place that's called Tara.
Uh-huh.
And they give you cages, you know, like humane cages.
Sure.
Where you can bring them in
yes.
and they'll fix them for
yes.
you for like $20.
Yes, I said that. That's exactly what you should do.
But what if, like, I have two cages now. What if, say, I catch one or two? Won't the others, you know, like, kind of freak out?
They won't freak out.
Not come back?
They don't know. They don't get the memo about where you're taking the other cats, so I think they'll be okay. You catch as many as you can catch.
Won't they, you know, like, seeing? I don't know how these cages work, if they slam shut.
So here's what will happen. I don't know the kind of cages you have. The facility that you're working with can give you information about the cages themselves. And it's great that you're going to take in the cats to be spayed or neutered. It's great that you care for these cats, which you clearly do. And I thank you much for the call. Please email me your questions so you can call me. We talk about that, right? 866-554-PETS, toll free. But you can also email Steve at stevedale.tv. Every week we take one lucky winner, an email question. Maybe it's a lucky loser. I don't know, because the person's writing me because you have a problem, right? And this one is rather unique, rather religious in a roundabout way. which I will explain as I read the question to you next. When do you want to spot that burglar? When he's casing your home or after he's in? Ask John, whose Blink camera alerted him a burglar's trying to break in while he and his family were home. Or Shannon, whose Blink camera system caught a thief stealing packages. Both times, Blink video clips were sent to police to help convict the crooks. And in a moment, I'll tell you how to get 20% off all Blink outdoor XT camera systems. Blink motion activated indoor and outdoor cameras are wire-free, set up in minutes, and run on two lithium batteries that last up to 2 years. And Blink's live feed option lets you monitor your home and check in on the kids and the pets from anywhere using your Blink smartphone app. No contracts, no subscriptions, totally affordable. And right now, Blink outdoor XT camera systems are an impressive 20% off. But hurry, the sale ends March 16th at midnight Eastern. Visit BlinkProtect.com/sale. 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 Blink is an Amazon company and it works with Alexa.
Aw, are you thirsty?
If you're a cat owner, you should know subtle behavioral changes can sometimes be early signs of illness.
Wow, you really need a brushing.
Signs like increased thirst or decreased grooming can be easy to miss. That's why every cat should receive a wellness exam twice a year to help prevent health problems before they become serious. A message from the American Veterinary Medical Association and your local veterinarians.
It's flu season, and in addition to protecting yourself and your family from the flu, you also need to protect your dog. Like human flu, both strains of canine flu are highly contagious and can cause runny nose and eyes, cough, fever, pneumonia, and in rare cases, even death. Don't worry, a new vaccine covers both strains of canine influenza. That means better protection for half the injections. Don't wait, vaccinate. Contact your veterinarian or visit doginfluenza.com to learn more.
The only radio show for the whole family that often advises using toys with feathers.
I miss my little kitty cat.
Welcome back to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You know, we've talked about probiotics before on the show and how probiotics can be beneficial just as they are to people, to pets. But what about a probiotic with a specific purpose to help relieve anxious pets? Well, there is such a thing now. It's called calming care, and we'll talk about that next week.
Great simple words. You got mail.
Woohoo!
You can always email your questions to steve@petworldradio.net.
Dear Steve, my 9-year-old Sheltie recently began to eat hymnals from the church and novels. I thought that he was after the glue in the binding, but Charlie began to destroy sheet music. I took him to the veterinary office to discuss the problem. The exam only revealed protein in Charlie's urine. The vet didn't know what to do, maybe to give Charlie steroid shots. Now, we've also caught our 4-year-old Sheltie in the act. What's going on? Well, apparently what's going on begins with my question to you. Are you stealing hymnals from the church? How is it that you have hymnals in your house? Okay, I'll leave that aside. I don't think the kidney problems have anything to do with this. Certainly need to be followed up on if there's protein or too much protein in Charlie's urine. That's an issue, but that has nothing to do with this. It's unclear if the problems occur when you're home or when you're away. So if this only happens when you're away, then it could be separation anxiety, and there are certain things we could do to help dogs with separation anxiety. If it happens when you're home, well, the easy answer is to not give your dog opportunity to do this. So those hymnals you're stealing from the church, put them up high away from the dog so the dog doesn't have an opportunity to do this. I'm concerned about it, really, because if your dog is actually chewing at this and swallowing, it could lead to a gastrointestinal obstruction, which could lead to surgery. So you do want to keep these hymnals and other books out of reach, sheet music, whatever it is. It could be due to boredom also. So the first thing I would try is to give your dog other things, appropriate objects to chew on, whether they are treats or low-fat peanut butter, low-fat cream cheese, stuffed in a toy like a Kong toy, or something else appropriate for your dog to do. So you're leaving the house and you leave that for your dog. If that doesn't solve the problem, or if your dog is now destroying other things, because remember, you put the hymnals away now, so if your dog is destroying other things in the house, then I'd begin to think about separation anxiety. In fact, I talk about these blink-activated cameras that can keep an eye on what's going on in your house when you're not home. And in fact, you can watch what happens with your dog. And the great things about these videos, is you can later show your veterinarian. And your veterinarian, by looking at your dog and looking at your dog's body language, can discern if your dog is having a party, is having a great time just enjoying destroying your house when you're not there, or at least things in your house, or your dog may have actual separation anxiety. Again, your veterinarian can tell looking at those blink videos, which you can even email. That's the cool thing about them. You can even email your veterinarian, who can look at those, so you don't even need necessarily to take your dog in for an exam. Having said that, again, there are some other things you can do. So if your dog is generally anxious, maybe Adaptil. That's a copy of a pheromone that'll help relieve some anxiety in dogs. There's a nutritional supplement called Zentrol, Z-E-N-T-R-O-L, that you can ask your veterinarian about if your dog is generally what you consider anxious. I hope all of that information, a lot of information I gave you. So I hope all of that jumbled in one place, you can kind of sift through, and I hope that at least begins to answer your question. You can email me your question, steve@stevedale.tv.
Officially sanctioned by the American Veterinary Medical Association.
This is Vets on Pets.
That's where Steve talks to the vets about your pets.
Don't worry, this won't hurt a bit.
Dr. Gail Golab is an old friend and chief veterinary officer for the American Veterinary Medical Association. You may have noticed, Dr. Golab, that more and more people like to fly with their pets. Sometimes these pets are truly service animals who make a difference in these folks' lives, provide independence they otherwise wouldn't have. At other times, not so much. And there are the extreme cases that make the news. I've talked about them, laughed about them, like the flying, what bird is it?
Peacocks.
Peacocks. Yes, peacocks. Who flies with a peacock? And they call these animals comfort llamas or comfort monkeys or peacocks. So that's what I want to talk about with you. And I guess where we start is, can a llama or monkey or peacock be a comfort animal?
So I think what we're really talking about is we're talking about service animals, which are those ones that you refer into that are trained and are really provide services to folks who need them. And so they're the ones that pick up laundry. They're the ones that ring doorbells. And then we have the emotional support animals, and they also provide tangible services for people, but they're not specifically trained. And so in that particular situation, they're providing emotional support for those animals.
So part of this is semantics and definitions as well as to what these animals are. And sometimes, yes, they pick up laundry and they help people with disabilities. Right. But sometimes those disabilities can't be seen by all of us. I coined the term years and years ago, invisible disabilities. So there are people with Crohn's disease who have assistance animals, people with chronic pain who have these, and these animals actually make it possible for them to lead as normal as possible life.
Definitely. And we also have differences between those animals that provide services for mental disabilities. And so we have psychiatric service animals, which again are animals that are specifically trained. And so, for example, if somebody has a mental disability and because of that disability they put themselves in harm's way, those animals are actually trained to intervene. On the other hand, emotional support animals also help people with mental disabilities, but their function is comfort. It's not specific intervention to accomplish something, and so that's the difference. Where we end up in trouble is when people don't understand the functions of those animals and when they try to make their pets into things that they are not. And so pets have an incredibly valuable place in our lives. There's no question about that. But the role that they play is very different than the role that a service animal plays or the role that an emotional support animal plays.
And the problem is when you go, first of all, it's easy enough to say you have something you don't, because you can go online and get a certificate for $29.99, and your animal is suddenly something. Your animal really, truly, but you get the vest, you get the piece of paper that says so. The problem with that, for me, is all those people who truly need for all those categories that you described and others. The list goes on. Seizure-detecting dogs, dogs that detect diabetes, people who really need these animals then.
And I think it's difficult. I think most people, I don't think they do it intentionally. I think they don't always understand the services that those animals provide, the ones that are actually validated. But it's incredibly important that they understand that when they do that, they potentially impede access for those folks that need it.
So the airlines have made some changes. One of those changes where we began all this, peacocks, for most airlines, aren't allowed to fly anymore. Llamas, no, you can't quite do that. No monkeys. And you're shaking your head, yes. I mean, that's probably a good thing.
Yes. I mean, and in most cases, what we're talking about are these animals. They're going to be, in the case of service animals, they're defined as dogs or miniature horses. In the case of emotional support animals, they're typically going to be either dogs or cats. And so we've been very supportive of trying to limit it to that, both for the well-being of the individuals, but also for the well-being of those animals.
The good news is our bond with our companion animals is more intense than it ever has been, which is good. I thank the AVMA for trying to sort of weave through all this to figure this out. And as you do, you'll continue to communicate with us?
Well, and we're really concentrated on providing education for everybody. So we want to make sure that the general public understands. We want to make sure that those with service animals are provided the access that they need. And we want to make sure that those that are carrying those animals, so the airlines or whether it happens to be Amtrak, understand the roles of those animals and so that we don't impede access for those folks that really need them.
AVMA.org, further information. Thank you, Dr. Golay.
Thank you.
Next week, a probiotic to help anxious dogs.
This is a Ricky Ricardo production.
Be good to your pets. They'll be good to you. We'll talk to you next time.